Hello, everybody. Welcome to, I think we're describing this as an emergency edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. Welcome to Carrow Road. We're here in the hours before Norwich City's League Cup first round game against Stevenage. Connor Southwell, Paddy Davitt, Samuel Seaman, usual characters. And as of Monday this week, at 2 o'clock, the whole axis of Norwich City changed, and it changed pretty dramatically with one statement. And that statement shows that after 27 years, this football club is heading for a dramatically new era, one that I think we probably all anticipated coming. Whether it was as quickly as it is planned to be coming or not, we shall see. But we're here because in similar circumstances to what we did in terms of the share issues last year, we thought this would be useful to offer you guys a little bit of an explainer about what that statement means, because I think we recognise it gets passed through lawyers at all ends and comes out in terms of an agreed legal text. So hopefully to provide a little bit more context in what will hopefully be some plain English for you guys to understand. But Paddy, before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, as a moment in Norwich City history, it's monumental, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah. I mean, and you see the reaction thereafter all through yesterday afternoon, particularly the human element that Delia and Michael have made what, on the face of it, is an unbelievable gesture from a pure financial standpoint. That, as you say, we'll get into the nuance of it, but effectively have handed over, if this process plays out as everybody hopes it does inside the football club, and not took a penny for it. So, and for a lot of fans, that's all they've ever known. Delia and Michael as the figureheads, the visible representation of their football club. So it is a big moment, albeit. And, you know, we've just spoken to one or two Norwich officials. You know, this isn't an overnight. It's not. We're not suddenly learning about Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings. You know, there has been an evolutionary path to this point. So I don't think it will feel like a major break, because a lot of the people who are going to be front and centre moving forward are already key in terms of the decision-making processes, financial, football decisions in the last 2 years or so. But nevertheless, you know, to have that announcement drop, and then the seismic nature of what it actually means for this football club, a 122-year institution, which for the thick end of the last three decades has had two people effectively driving it forward, setting the tone, you know, making the decisions, for them not to be there potentially now in very short order, does feel like a big moment, particularly when you see which direction the club are looking to go with and who they're looking to pass on the baton. So, Yeah, it's somebody else who I won't name, but who's on the executive said, you know, who needs a Johnny Rowe transfer saga when you've got this sort of news yesterday afternoon? And they're probably right, because it definitely did dwarf anything to do with Johnny Rowe or Adam Eder, because this is far bigger, because it impacts on 25,000 people who come here every other home game in terms of home fans and generations of fans before and hopefully to come, because this is what this is. This is a football institution, but it's part of the community. It's about the fans. And for three decades or so, it's been led by two fans.
Yeah, and on that, Sam, I mean, certainly in our respective lifetimes, it has been Delia and Michael in charge of this football club. And I'm sure, as Paddy said, it will have been, not for everybody, but for a generation of fans, Delia and Michael as the figureheads of Norwich City has been the way. It has been what this football club has been all about. So just in terms of them and their legacy, I mean, everything 21st century Norwich is, good and bad, is probably because of them.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget about that when you're in the nitty-gritty every day and you're covering this football club on a full-time basis. But you ask anyone really about Norwich City Football Club that doesn't support this club, that isn't watching it, watching it do what it does every single day, and one of the first things they'll say, whether they like football or not, is about Delia Smith. So I think those two have defined this football club for a really long time, and through some fantastic times and some really poor ones, they've obviously been the figureheads. And, you know, as you mentioned, there will be a lot of fans who come here every week that don't know what this club looks like without Delia and Michael. And of course, they will still have 10% in the club when all of this is completed and the process is done. But it does represent a real tectonic shift for this football club going forward. Yeah, I think they have to be commended, as, to be fair, a lot of people did when that statement came out, and they have had a lot of stick, particularly in recent years, a lot of people disagreeing with maybe the direction that the club was going in underneath them. But it was nice to see a bit of recognition for what a fantastic gesture this is from them, and not just a gesture, an actual financial commitment that really allows this club to kick on and be, you know, as Paddy said, a community asset going forward. Really, it's a fantastic way for them to bow out, not to take a single penny, to dilute their shares from being joint majority shareholders to 10% versus what will be Norfolk Holdings 85% next year. So yeah, a fitting end to what has been a real significant era for Norwich City. A lot of ups and downs under them, and yeah, it will feel a little bit weird to see this club not underneath them, but it's obviously been coming for a little while, and I think everyone knew this day was going to come. It was just maybe a surprise that it came at 2 p.m. yesterday, as early as it did.
Yes, and who needs to deal with that when you've got a transfer sagas and whatnot in full swing? But there we go. And I think there'll be a lot of people, Paddy, looking at this statement and probably asking two questions. So I'll ask one of them to you now. What does this mean? And probably the second one is why now? So I'll let Sam answer the why now, but you take the nitty-gritty of what this actually means for this football club.
Well, basically, let's try and break it down. Where are we at the minute? We have, as Sam rightly says, you have two effective power bases in that boardroom. You've got Delia and Michael with their 40% or so ordinary shares, and you have a parity figure for Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings. Norfolk Holdings is the vehicle, you know, with one or two of his business partners, obviously family, the Brewers executives from over the other side of the pond. So for the last period since last year's share allotment process, that's where we've been at, working within the parameters of this lockstep arrangement, which was from January 2023. For 3 years, Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings would vote in lockstep with the wishes of Delia and Michael. But yesterday's announcement effectively creates a path to tilting decisively that shareholder mix from 40-40 to 85-10 in favour of Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings. How they're going to do that, the vehicle to do that, is a debt-to-equity vehicle for £59 million worth of loans, borrowing, debt, whatever label you want to attach, which effectively, and this is the absolute crucial point, I think, will turn Norwich from almost a negative entity in terms of on the balance sheet to actually being not quite debt-free, but the vast majority of the debt will have been cleared. And the way they want to do that is by creating these non-voting preference shares, Class D and Class D and Class D and Class E, as it's been explained to us. 2.4 million Class D shares, which for £59 million, then allow Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings, from March the 1st onwards next year, convert those 2.4 million shares into ordinary shares, which would then trigger the 85-10 mix and then 5% for the non-board level shareholders. So, you know, you don't need to be an economics whiz to understand that effectively what this will achieve is Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings, as the majority control of this football club, and the debt position transformed, you know, from a position where they had, as I say, 59 million owed to, you know, Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings. And that was a lot of what drove the share allotment process last year. But this now takes it on to another level. And that's only been, to reiterate what we said at the start, that's only been made possible because Delia and Michael have agreed to do it that way and to convert their shares into effectively a debt for equity vehicle, without taking a penny out and retaining then 10%. But obviously 10% of a business which is not saddled with debt. And the final point I'd make on that, without trying to go too convoluted in terms of the numbers, is that by converting that debt into equity, there's no interest payments then accruing on that tens and tens of millions of debt, borrowings, loans. And as a result, that improves dramatically the profit and sustainability position, which, as we know, we've seen it this summer more broadly in football. That's massive now. We've seen Leicester get into a few issues, West Brom this summer. You know, the formerly FFP, now the profit sustainability guidelines and parameters that clubs are having to work within are really limiting their room for manoeuvre. And this process, if it all goes through as they hope it will go through, will allow Norwich a lot more room financially and fiscally to operate moving forward, because they won't have tens and tens of million pounds worth of interest being paid down on debt, because that debt will no longer be debt in that sense. It'll be converted into equity via a share process, which allows Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings to effectively carry the torch from Delia and Michael.
Yeah, and you mentioned it there, but as part of that debt, there's payments every year to kind of Mark Attanasio's group that won't ever, or there's no intention of ever really being repaid. So, as you said, and that's why it frees them up a little bit in terms of those PSR rules. And as you said, we've seen a lot in terms of that with particularly the Premier League, but also clubs like West Brom and others in the EFL who have maybe struggled with those rules. So dramatically coupled with, obviously, the sale of Gabriel Sara this summer and potentially others as well. It drastically improves their position of that, which I think, Sam, probably does answer a little bit of the why now question, because this comes on to a point about not necessarily where some people maybe ideally would like it, which is blank checks and big transfer fees. It's probably the unsexy stuff, isn't it, in terms of financial stability, long-term, well, sustainability and planning and strategy, all of those things. This is a move that really secures the long-term future of this football club.
Yeah, I think realistically, you look at the numbers that Norwich were getting into in terms of debt, and you know, around 60 million obviously owed to that group, and it did feel like the balance of where the club was going was moving away from Smith and Wynne Jones and the sort of finances they could offer. I think their net worth is something like 20 times smaller than Attanasio's is. And it did feel like maybe it was getting away from those sorts of levels. Of course, there are plenty of factors. You know, you talk there about PSR, and it is now an era which Norwich have where they don't have any parachute payments. They've obviously been out of the Premier League for a long while and missed those broadcasting revenues. And you have to really, I think, look at it as a whole package. And ultimately, being a Championship club that wants to challenge for promotion every season if you possibly can is quite a difficult financial position, and it's quite a difficult one to sustain. So I think it did feel like the time was sort of getting there when Norwich needed somebody like Attanasio and like his group, who had maybe more of that finance and also that sort of finance background that Smith and Wynne Jones didn't have. And for that reason, I think the timing is key for Norwich in that long-term sustainability and stability. That's what makes the difference for me really at this stage. And I think when everyone saw that sort of 3-year lockstep agreement, everyone thought this was something you could probably forget about for a little while. Those who wanted Smith and Wynne Jones to depart fairly quickly were disappointed. But I think this also shows that as much as Smith and Wynne Jones have been keen to be slow about it and do the right processes and take due consideration around it, that they have always had the club's best interests at heart. And when they've seen that it's sort of getting away from the sorts of figures that maybe they're most available for and most comfortable with, that's when they've been very willing to hand this off to Attanasio and his group. So it feels like, although this has been a fairly long process, when they felt they needed to act, they have acted fairly quickly, and in that sense the timing does feel quite apt and quite key in the long-term sustainability here.
Yeah, indeed, and a couple of things to reference, and you know, those who will have watched or listened to the podcast we did last year around this, a few things to note. So that lockstep agreement was going to be one of them, and that 3-year cycle, that's now gone once this deal is signed. In terms of the mechanics, Paddy touched on it slightly, but this is basically a vehicle to enable Mark Attanasio's group to move up to 85%, isn't it, Delia and Michael's, in terms of their shares. That won't change, but it obviously, because more shares are getting injected into the business, so to speak, their overall percentage would be reduced to 10%. That's right, isn't it? And they would, upon this deal being completed, which we're going to come on to now in terms of a process, they will step down from the board and become life presidents of this football club. And from what we gather, there are plans currently to try or work out best how to honour them. But I don't think anything has been decided yet. So we'll see how those transpire. But Paddy, this probably next stage of this conversation is going to sound very similar in terms of procedurally to what we had last year with waivers and Rule 9 and all of that type of thing. Just talk to us about what happens now from this date to March the 1st, when obviously the hope is that this deal will be done.
Okay, well, it's a little bit fluid as we stand here today, but essentially where we're at now is first step post that announcement on Monday is the takeover panel, which is this independent body which regulates public limited companies, I think, of which Norwich City are. And if particularly if there's any potential changes in terms of ownership and share mix, then they step in and they have rules around that. And Norwich are in dialogue with the takeover panel as we stand here today. And I think the expectation is that they will be granted that Rule 9 waiver, which is, again, to try and break it down, it's effectively to avoid a situation where Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings have to mandatorily make an offer to the ordinary 6,500 or so ordinary shareholders for their shareholding. Not Delia and Michaels, but the 6,500 or so are the ones of which the Canaries Trust, I think, are the biggest. So as it stands, that Mark and Norfolk Holdings would be mandated to make an offer. The Rule 9 waiver would allow them not to have to go down that route.
And again, just in terms of numbers, so people are clear, that we'd be talking around the same figures we were last year in terms
maximum,
of 25.
I think maximum we've been told, yeah. Although the caveat has been that obviously you look at that club now and they have 60 million plus worth of debt. Are they valued at the same point as what they were previously? But even if you take that as a given, then yeah, no more than 25, because apparently that is what Mark Attanasio paid per share at the height of his share buying process. So they don't have to offer anything more than that. So it would be 25, we think, in that ballpark per share. But so rowing it back, we get the takeover code panel, Rule 9 waiver comes through. At that point, Norwich will then be in a position where they can actually communicate out to those ordinary shareholders a lot of documentation, as was last time around, very similar. PAC will drop through letterboxes. And I think then within 3 weeks from that point, they would look to call another one of these extraordinary shareholder meetings to effectively wave through the waiver. Are you happy with that waiver? If you are, then at that point, so, you know, if it all goes to plan, it's a little bit fluid at the minute because they're obviously in the hands of the takeover panel as we stand here today. But I think there is an expectation maybe by the end of September, certainly that's the timeline they seem to be working to as a club, that you would be at the point where the shareholders have voted, they've agreed to the waiver, and at that point, Delia and Michael immediately step down off the board, become honorary life presidents. And from then until March the 1st, there's a process whereby that whole legal element of the share vehicle, the 59 million that we talked about previously, the debt to equity vehicle, the 2.4 million Class D non-voting shares will play out so that from March the 1st onwards, Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings could convert those 2.4 million into actual ordinary shares. And at that point, it's almost, but it could be a little bit confusing, but September effectively is the point where, to all intents and purposes, Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings are 85% shareholders, majority control of this football club, Delia and Michael diluting to 10%. But the actual rubber stamping of that would be from March the 1st onwards. I think you asked the question of an official we just had a chat with, and that's more to do with maybe the American side of this and Mark Attanasio and the companies that he's using around his involvement in Norwich City, and maybe some of the regulatory deadlines that they have to work to is why it's going to take from September to March. But in all intents and purposes, from September onwards, if it's cleared the takeover panel, shareholders have voted it through, then we could talk about it effectively being Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings in overall control. And as I say, that will be, yesterday was a momentous day, that will be another momentous day, won't it? Because then it will be, you know, official. But it's worth reiterating that I don't think too much will change internally. I don't think we'll suddenly see, you know, a massive change in direction, and we might get into that a little bit later in this discussion. But because effectively Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings, a lot of the Brewers staff, you know, they have been boots on the ground working very closely with Norwich officials, Norwich board for the last 2 years or so. So I think while externally that might feel like a seismic moment, and of course it is, that passing of the baton in terms of the ownership and the boardroom dynamic, I think internally it'll probably be very much business as usual.
Yeah, agreed. And like I said, we were going to come on to that. Just one footnote in terms of what you said, Delia and Michael also retain a clause to enforce it if it hasn't been done by March. So basically at that point, it would be deal done. Just to give them some peace of mind that a deal wasn't going to be done and then they were never going to enforce it. So that is the situation. So if that does get passed, it is essentially a deal done in all but name. One process, Sam, that is different, I think, to last time is the EFL element to this, because last time I think most supporters probably got increasingly frustrated at the length that it took, and that was largely around to individuals and individuals within that Norfolk Holdings group and Mark Attanasio's group being subjected to directors' tests, essentially those sort of fit and proper tests that we associate with owners, and there's obviously quite a few of those in the States that needed to jump through that. But the benefit of that process having already happened, because once you pass, was it 20%, 25%? In the EFL's mind, you do have an element of control, which basically means that that process has to happen. So a lot of these sort of elements that and hoops that they had to jump through with the EFL last time aren't there because they've already been done. So this should be a quicker process, and we've already seen Richard Resler appointed to the board. So this should be a quicker process, should be a quicker process because of the avoidance of that EFL sort of element.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was an important part of the latest development in this, obviously, this series of Attanasio's increased involvement and of that group's increased involvement. I don't know about you two, but it might be the question I've been asked most in my time in this job as to when that EFL approval was going to finally come through, and when you have something dragging on like that and the uncertainty that it creates in the fan base. I think there are a lot of people worried that actually there were some second thoughts going on because it was taking so long. But it does feel like, number one, because that EFL element isn't a thing, as you said, all of the relevant individuals have already been through that, so it doesn't need to happen again. And also because there seem to be most of the elements are lined up, pretty much ready to go by the time the vote with the independent shareholders has taken place. It does feel like there isn't as much opportunity for that frustration and maybe some of those minor conspiracy theories to take place and to fester. And I think when you're making a change this big, and it's a positive one that most fans wanted to see, it's important that you do it quickly, that you take decisive action to make it happen, and that people can just look forward to what it means for the football club rather than worrying about all these things in between. So as far as the messaging around it and the feeling that it will create, it allows them to keep hold of a bit of that momentum that maybe they lost when they were waiting for this EFL approval in sort of the last stage. And I think, although the matters are very much separate for now, when you look at how much patience might be needed on the pitch and some of the discontent that there's likely to be around some of the results that will take place this season, I think when you can have such a huge positive narrative to sort of drive the fans and to give them something to cling on to while this Johannes Hoftorp project gets going a little bit, I think that really helps the feeling around the club at the moment. And the feeling is of positive change. And, you know, as you said, not going to be as many hold-ups this time as there were last time. And I think that's only a positive in terms of that narrative.
Yeah, a couple of other things. Again, as per last time, Norwich City will get an independent body to do those counting of votes. So again, very, very similar process, and it's one vote per shareholder, isn't it? In terms of that as well. Yeah. So
and again, this thing, same as previous, you know, Mark Attanasio, Norfolk Holdings, Delia and Michael, deemed legally to be acting in concert during this process, so they will be out of the equation for the shareholder vote. That'll be purely those 6,500 or so independent shareholders.
It's probably worth saying it is one per share. So when you vote, you can only make one decision. You can't split shares, but every share gets... So if you have more of a proportion of the shares, you'll get more of a say, basically, than those with less shares.
Yeah, as was the case last time. So a lot of the procedural elements, as we said, are pretty similar. It's just probably the what it means that is slightly different. And there will be people, Paddy, watching this and going, this is all very well and good, and this is all very positive, and I like the sound of this compared to, you know, the backdrop of other football clubs who struggle financially. What does it mean for transfers? That's going to be a key question amongst the Norwich City fans, who are going to, by all accounts, see... They've seen another American billionaire added to the board in the coming days. That will come probably with, I don't know if expectations are wrong, maybe hope that it raises the ceiling of where this football club can operate. but it sounds more like it's a strengthening of the current position and their current position rather than probably drastically changing it. And us now seeing Kevin De Bruyne and the like, which, you know, if he's more than welcome to come play here if he likes. It's a beautiful surface, as we can see, but it probably strengthens it rather than drastically changes it. So let's paint a scenario where you have, I don't know, I'm not applying any current context to this, but let's say you have a young player who maybe wants out and isn't going about that the right way. You could take a slightly stronger position because of where you are financially as a club to maybe what you could have done a few years ago. Hypothetically, of course.
Yeah, that's bad news for a certain individual. But at heart, what we've got here is the point I made earlier. This isn't going to be a dramatic pivoting away of what this club's all about, how they've been run. At the crux of that is the self-funded element. You know, there's not going to be suddenly a desire to throw tens and tens of millions of dollars, let alone pounds. But because, simply put, you look at Mark Attanasio, he's been in it, the Brewers, principal owner of the Brewers now, him and his family for 18, 19 years now. I don't profess to have an intimate knowledge of American baseball or baseball ownership finance, but I think it's accepted wisdom that they haven't thrown money at it. They've achieved their success by being very astute, data-led, hence Ben Napper's appointment, which he Mark Attanasio, was very heavily involved with. And then subsequently, you've seen how Ben Napper is driving it forward with data at its very heart, because they're looking for those marginal gains, trying to be smart, make good decisions, not throw tons of money, because that's simply not how Mark Attanasio has operated at the Brewers. So I think that's the first thing I would say. But what it will allow, and you touched on it there with that hypothetical example.
Completely hypothetical, yeah. Just plucked from my head, you know.
But if you have, as we stand here today, 59 million plus of debt, loans, borrowing on the balance sheet, then you move through this process and that's no longer the case, and you go from a negative position to neutral or positive, then it just affords your executive team here, Ben Napper, Zoe, Anthony Rickens, Johannes as well, of course, and his coaching staff, and above them, Mark and Norfolk Holdings, an ability to make decisions based on not purely we need to keep the wolf from the door, we need to keep the bank manager happy, we need to pay down on interest, but no, what actually is better for this club and what we're trying to achieve, which ultimately is get this place back to the Premier League. Johannes has come in, he said, I want to get to the Premier League. Ben Napper has said the same. I'm sure Mark Attanasio, big mates with John W. Henry, he doesn't want to be in the Championship, he wants to be in the Premier League. So they're all working to that common goal, but it's how you achieve that. And the chances of doing that are dramatically increased, I think, with an environment financially that affords them the ability to make decisions like that on that example, or, you know, being able to reinvest. As we've seen, Gabby Zara goes, they go and bring in a Manquah Forsen. Very different in terms of the figures of finance involved there, but they still have seen in him, and I'd throw Jose Cordoba in there, they've seen players who, in the right coaching environment, with Johannes potentially, could one day be Premier League players with a Premier League upgrade in terms of their valuations. That is the model. Buy at a reasonable level that Norwich can afford right here, right now, develop those players, and then you get, and Johannes has said it liberally in the last few days, a Gabby Zara story. You know, you bring in a player who's very good for you on the pitch, but he also then probably outstrips where you are as a club, and you can sell him for a real uplift in his value. And that is worth pointing out, that this summer, albeit not because this process has only been announced, but because they've been working along this path now with Mark Attanasio, they're almost at the backstop, and Norfolk Holdings, they've been able to go back into the market and replace Gabby Zara potentially with a Manquah Forsen, Jose Cordoba coming in. And you can be sure, if, as we record here, Adam Idris still hasn't officially completed his move to Celtic, but if that goes through, they will be in the market for a permanent striker, and they will be willing to pay millions of pounds. It won't have a 20 or a 10 at the front of it, yeah. But millions of pounds. And that's a very different landscape from, we've got to sell the family silver and we've got nothing in the cupboard to replace it with this summer. That isn't the case. And that will only accelerate that process now as we move forward. This is ratified, signed, sealed, delivered. And then you'll see, I'm sure, next summer's window, more of the same and thereafter, that Norwich will be able to continue to sell players to generate funds, but actually reinvest in the squad. And that hasn't always been the case in recent seasons. You know, James Maddison, that summer, he got sold to effectively keep the club afloat. Mm. That wasn't money that they then reinvested into the squad. And so I think, you know, that's the big takeaway from this process that was announced yesterday, that what they're trying to do is realign almost financially to give Norwich the best possible chance and create the best possible conditions to actually achieve what Johannes, Ben Napper, the executive committee, Mark Attanasio, and the supporters all want, which is to get back to the Premier League, but also sustainably have a go at staying there.
Yeah, and it's fluid as well, isn't it, in terms of the selling players, buying players element? Because if you can raise one level, then by virtue, the buying level comes up as well. If you can increase the level for which you sell players, and you have to be in a stronger financial position in order to hold out for better fees and the fees that you want in order to do that. And, you know, we could use Brighton as an example here, who have upped the amount they're selling players for. And by virtue of that, they can up the value that they're buying players for. Just finally, Sam, in terms of this whole process, I think it's quite rare in football that we see a transition like this, because you think of takeovers, you tend to think maybe the exception Newcastle was, but not financially. That was more of a disdain, really, between the supporters and the ownership there. But you could count, you know, countless examples of takeovers. It's usually because of financial crisis. Primarily, I think, you know, we mapped out a Newcastle example there. There are others, but primarily it's because of a club that's in complete disarray financially. And that means that owners come in and sweep everything clear, and everyone who was ever associated with the last guy or girl are gone. So the fact that this has happened in so smooth order, and we're talking about transitions that maybe externally will feel different, but internally will feel quite similar, and a lot of the same people will be just having the same conversations that they're having now. That feels positive in terms of continuity, sustainability, stability, all of those elements that we spoke about.
Yeah, and I think it's testament to Delia and Michael's willingness to wait for the right people to come along. You know, it's been a long time now that they've been always open to selling if it was the best thing for the club. They've waited this amount of time to find someone who really does represent that. And it had its fair share of scepticism at the start when it looked like it was going to be this slow process, and some of those fans who maybe have seen the failures of recent years were hoping for something more drastic, more immediate. But you look at the way that some of the other clubs in the Championship and lower down the leagues have operated in recent years, I think you can only see that as a good thing, really. There aren't many examples of instability in ownership that ever end well. So I think this sort of slow transition has worked quite well. This willingness from Mark Attanasio and his group to work with the people who are already here and to be open to the fact that they might not know everything, actually. And for somebody who's had as much success as they have in their respective careers, I think that's quite a strong quality, to not come and just want to sort of bulldoze everything and employ 100% of your own people and completely change things. They've kept what's good about the club. They've had a sustainable eye on things. And I think, although maybe it hasn't been the quickest process or the most exciting process at times, they've done it in a really, really good way that hasn't at any point come close to some of the disasters that you've seen at other clubs and some of the drama that you've seen at other clubs. So, yeah, for me, that's another big positive in all of this. And in the long term, I think Norwich will certainly see the benefits.
Yeah, just in terms of a couple of footnotes, in terms of the board composition, it won't change drastically. It is essentially Delia and Michael stepping down. We've already seen Richard Resler appointed. I think there's the possibility potentially in the future of another, possibly from outside the world of football, to offer a little bit more insight in maybe a different aspect, be it commercial or different areas potentially coming on the board. Tom Smith is going to remain on the board, and obviously Zoe Webber still on the board. That exec team that has operated, Ben Napper, Anthony Richens, we've spoken about, that will all remain in place as of now. So it is very much a similarity and a continuity, but just all about stability. And obviously, of course, it's a massive change for this football club as well. I wanted to add as well that there's still going to be an AGM. So irrespective of how this process goes from here, that the club is still committed to that and will be irrespective of any of changes. So I think that's pretty much everything, Paddy, unless there's anything that we've missed. But if you have got any comments, do feel free to put them in the comments or get in touch with us. We do Q&As, all of those type of things. You can ask them in there and we'll do our best to answer them or try and find out an answer for you. But hopefully this was a useful explainer of what this news means for Norwich City. It's a hugely significant, it was a hugely significant day yesterday. We've got a couple of more of those to come. And we will, of course, keep you updated on the process as and when. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you soon.